Hi, this is Perry, and you're listening to Chemist Corner for Friday, February 6, 2015. Hello and welcome to Chemist Corner. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, and we've got an excellent show for you today. Our show is going to feature a natural theme. We'll look at some aspects of natural formulating and have an interview with Dennis Abaduto, who is a senior chemist at Colonial Chemical. We're going to be talking to him about some of their green surfactant technology. It's really interesting stuff, and it ties in well with our upcoming natural formulating course, which I'll talk about a little later in the show. Since we're in the process of launching a new course about formulating natural cosmetic products, I thought it would be interesting to look at what I call the natural cosmetic market. In putting together this course, I've been looking at the different ways that cosmetic companies market their products as natural. While it seems that almost everyone has some kind of SKU or advertising targeting natural, there are a number of brands that really focus solely on a natural positioning. Here are the top 15 brands as of 2013 in this space. Interestingly, big companies dominate this area too. You would think that this is more of a small company area, but no, big companies have gotten the big brands here too. However, there is a big hole for companies like P&G and Unilever, as they don't have any top brands, yet anyway. I find this a little strange because in conventional cosmetic markets, P&G and Unilever really have all of the dominant brands. Anyway, here are the top 15 or so natural cosmetic brands. The number one brand is Burt's Bees, and this was an independent company, but now it's owned by Clorox, which doesn't usually have beauty brands, but Clorox is the one there. And Burt's Bees is, you know, over $150 million in sales or so. So it's pretty big. The next biggest would be Aveda, and Aveda was an independent company, but now they're owned by Estee Lauder. Aveeno, which is owned by Johnson & Johnson, is another brand, the third top brand, that's focused mostly on natural. And then we have The Body Shop, which was an independent, who got bought out by L'Oreal. So you can see what happens. These small companies make themselves medium-sized, and then a big company buys them up. And next we have Nu Skin at number five, and then the Hain Celestial Group. Dr. Perricone comes in. Then there are Bare Essentials. Then we have a brand called Jurlicue. And then another recognizable one that was bought out by Colgate-Palmolive is Toms of Maine. They really focus on doing oral products like toothpaste. Then we have Dr. Bronner's. Next is Say Yes to Carrots. Avon is also included here. Some people look at Avon as having a lot of natural brands. And Weleda. And then finally, Aubrey Organics, which you can find in specialty stores. Now, these brands aren't huge compared to conventional brands. Burt's Bees, for example, is not even a $200 million brand, while, you know, a conventional brand like Pantene is over $1 billion. But the natural cosmetic market overall is growing, and now is thought to be about a $30 billion worldwide industry. And it's an industry that is still open for new brands. If you have an idea for a natural-themed cosmetic line, you can still find a good number of consumers. It's just more difficult to formulate those, and as you're restricted in the number and types of ingredients that you can use, this is one of the reasons that we've put together our new course. All right, another aspect of natural formulating is the idea of having products certified as natural or organic by some type of accrediting organization. That leads naturally to the question, should your products be organically certified? I read an excellent write-up of a debate between two cosmetic industry experts about the value of having your products certified by one of the natural standards. Beauty blogger and cosmetic chemist Colin Sanders squared off with Amjet Sahota, the director of Organic Monitor, about the topic of organic certification. If you are marketing in the natural or organic space, it's worth reading to see what those two gentlemen think. I'll have a link in the show notes. The basic arguments were that Colin thought the standards were just a marketing exercise and don't really help sell products, while Amarjit thought certification gives a legitimacy to brands that they can't get otherwise. I thought about this, and I wanted to share my perspective on this topic. I'll look at both the pros and cons of cosmetic organic certification. There are a number of reasons why you might want to get certified. First, it appeals to consumers, or at least some consumers. There is a significant segment of the population that will see certification as a good reason to specifically buy a product. If you are marketing to those consumers, your certification will definitely help you sell more product. It's also a way to stand out among your competition. Right now, few of the competitors are getting certified. If you do, you'll have that point of differentiation in your marketing material, which can help you sell more product. Of course, this will be short-lived because if you do start doing well, your competition can just get certified and then take that advantage away from you. But that advantage exists right now. Getting certified also gives you clear guidelines. One of the most challenging things about green formulating is knowing what ingredients are okay to use and which ones aren't. Following a certification program lets you know exactly what you can and cannot use. Now, it may also be adopted by government agencies, and so while these standards are not accepted by governments around the world right now, there is definitely a push to get them adopted. If you are already certified, you'll be ahead of the competition if or when this type of certification becomes mandatory. On the other hand, there are also reasons why you don't need to get certified. For example, consumers don't know what it means. If your consumer doesn't know what the certification symbol means and it doesn't really appeal to them, it's not going to do much for your sales. Now, at the moment, these certification groups have not done enough marketing to make consumers really know they exist. It also costs money. This type of certification is not free, and it can represent a significant cost, especially if you're a small brand. If you have to decide between spending money on certification or spending it on other types of marketing, you'll probably be better off going with the other types of marketing. Certification also restricts your formulating. For the cosmetic formulator, this is really the biggest problem. These certification programs tell you exactly what compounds you can and cannot use. They will be the ones who dictate your formulas and your ability to create new products. This will make it much harder to create products that perform as well or better than your competition. And remember, no matter how natural you are, consumers want products that work. So you've got that to keep focused on. Then ultimately, when you follow a certification program, you give up control of your formulation efforts. Someone else restricts what you can use, so all your future products will be limited to what some other company tells you you can make. Really, do you want to restrict yourself in this way? Do you want to limit your ability to innovate? You also open yourself up to yearly inspections, which you have to pay for, which isn't desirable to most companies. So we're left with the question, should you get organically certified? Only you can answer this question for yourself and your company. If your consumer is someone who is impressed by organic certification and it makes them buy more of your product, then you absolutely should get certified. However, if your consumer is like most people and has no clue what certification means or why it matters to them, you're better off following your own natural standards and claiming that your products are naturals or organic. It's really only a question that you can answer. Dennis Abadudo has nearly 20 years surfactant and formulation chemistry experience and currently works for Colonial Chemical Incorporated in Southeast Tennessee as a senior R&D chemist. Prior to this, he worked for Alberto Culver in Chicago on skincare technologies and as a formulation chemist for the St. Ives brand. Dennis also worked for the McIntyre Group in University Park, Illinois, as an R&D synthesis and application chemist. He has a BS in chemistry from Governor State University in University Park. Dennis has been an SCC member since 1997, serving as Midwest Chapter Secretary and Chair, and received a Chapter Young Scientist Award in 2004. He lives in Chattanooga, Tennessee, with his wife, son, and three cats. Hello, Dennis. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Dennis, you and I, we used to work together, and you moved on to the supplier world, and I wanted to talk to everybody about the kind of interesting technologies you have. Now, we have you on the program today because the idea of formulating natural products continues to be one of the hottest areas of formulation. The company that you work with is Colonial Chemical, and they're one of the leaders in the development of bio-based surfactants and other types of formulas. So before we get started, why don't you tell me a little bit about Colonial Chemicals and how they got involved in the development of eco-friendly surfactants?
Sure. Colonial Chemical actually started out about 25 years ago as a Southeast distributor for Mona Industries. Some of the older folks in the audience might recognize that name, but nowadays they've since gone through a couple transitions and are those product lines are known as Croda products. Before that, it went through ICI and Unichema and so forth. So,
there definitely is a lot of turnover in the cosmetic industry, huh?
yeah, there sure is.
You know, it's funny, the companies change, but the technologies are frequently the same, you know?
That's right. So, what we did is when our distributor agreement ended with the old Mona Industries, we started making some of those chemicals on our own, and so we continue to be a major supplier of a lot of secondary surfactants like betaines and amphoacetates, amides, and so forth. But the eco-friendly portion of it is a little bit more recent, probably within the last 8 to 10 years. And that started all out with one of our partners going to a presentation and learning a lot about glucoside chemistry, which at that time was one of the only 100% bio-based surfactant chemistries available. He saw a lot of potential in that chemistry, but thought that they can be improved upon. And so we started here at Colonial developing new products from the glucosides as a starting material. So we have a variety of products now, that have been functionalized from glucosides, including anionics, cationics, and nonionics, which offer a lot of flexibility to the formulator and retain a lot of that bio-based content of the glucoside. And also, as we have since discovered, are actually quite a bit milder than the original glucoside starting materials,
Wow.
which provides additional benefits to the formulator.
Yeah, exactly. Before we get into some of the specific technologies, one of the most challenging parts of formulating natural or green products is coming up with a definition for green or natural. What does your company use as sort of a guiding definition for green or natural when it comes to the creation of new raw materials?
Sure. So, yeah, we saw that was a big challenge in the industry as well, and we wanted to be very clear in terms of where we were coming from in terms of our green chemistry here at Colonial. So what we did is we started with the 12 principles of green chemistry, which was originally published through the American Chemical Society. Since there have been some books and things like this, it was developed by Paul Anastas and John Warner, and they have a nice outline for what it means to be green in terms of chemistry. And it's not based on greenwashing or, I guess, touchy-feely type green aspects, but it's very concrete in terms of preventing waste, designing safer chemicals from the start, using less hazardous chemical processes, renewable feedstocks, making sure that the end products are good for the environment, degrade properly, and all in all, providing the same benefits as the maybe less green or more hazardous type products that we're trying to avoid.
Right, so there can still be some synthetic aspect of the compound. You guys just do it in a more sustainable, sort of safer kind of way?
Yeah, that's what we try to do. what we tried to do is look at a lot of the existing chemistries and say, how can we do some of the same things, but maybe a little bit better? So we were a very early adopter of, for example, like the green propylene glycol from DuPont Tate & Lyle, the Zamea product. We've incorporated some other propylene glycols from ADM, from renewable feedstocks. We're also using pentylene glycol from renewable feedstocks. So, these sort of things that you would have originally considered to be, not green or synthetic, there are better sources now, and wherever possible, we're using those sources.
Well, that's great. One of the biggest challenges for natural formulators is finding surfactants that can replace the high-performance surfactants like sodium lauryl sulfate or sodium lauryl ethyl sulfate. Now, you have a number of different technologies, but let's focus on the kinds of ingredients that you would recommend for producing a high-foaming, good cleansing formulation. So, what would you suggest that a formulator who wants to make a shampoo or a body wash that can compete with the standard industry benchmarks, what kind of surfactants would you suggest they use?
Right. So we, early on in development of our glucoside-based technology, came up with an anionic product. The inky name for it is sodium lauryl glucosides hydroxypropyl sulfonate. We call it Shuganate 160NC. As you might guess by the name, it is a sulfonate similar in the anionic structure to like alpha olefin sulfonate, but it's very different in that it comes from obviously the lauryl glucoside, which is 100% bio-based, and then we use a linking material that's also 100% bio-based to attach the sulfonate portion, which would be considered mineral. So all the carbons going into this product are from renewable sources, and that gives us a 100% green product. The advantages of this product are that it's extraordinarily mild. It elicits by itself zero irritation to skin or eyes. It's able to build viscosity in combination with traditional secondary surfactants like betaines and sulfobetaines and amphoacetates. And you get pretty good foaming and a fairly good product out of the end of it. SLS is one of those things that's going to continue to be a very difficult challenge to replace altogether in terms of all its aspects.
Right.
But for folks that are looking to do a greener, more sustainable formula, a less irritating formula, and something that's still a reasonable facsimile of a major product, we feel that the Shuganate product is one of the best out there.
Well, I tried a sample. I saw you guys at a trade show. I think it was the New York Suppliers Day, and you had samples there. And I tried a sample of a formulated shampoo, and yeah, it was pretty decent. So clearly, you can make a good performing shampoo using that technology.
Yeah, and we offer a lot of support to folks that are using the products. Formulators we know are pressed for time and need a lot of help when selecting a new product like this. We don't expect folks to, just get a sample and know what to do with it. And so we offer a lot of assistance to formulators to make sure that they get to the products that they want using our technologies.
Yeah. Well, cleansing products are just one type of product that natural formulators have to make. The other type of formulation, especially for skincare, are moisturizing products. I know you worked a lot on St. Ives with that. Typically, these require emulsifier surfactants that can keep an oil and water blend stable. There are lots of synthetically derived emulsifiers, but what type of technology do you have that can be used for to create things like water and oil emulsions in a more natural kind of way?
Right. So what we have is our line of glucoside-derived emulsifiers, and these are actually copolymers of two fairly common ingredients, the desylglucoside and sorbitan malonate. So the thought process behind this was typically with an emulsifier, you're starting with a fairly lipophilic fatty alcohol and adding ethylene oxide to that to get to a higher HLB or more hydrophilic product. What we've done is we start with a very low HLB sugar ester, the sorbitan malonate, and we add desylglucoside to it in order to get to a higher HLB or more hydrophilic product. And so by altering the ratio of those two, I guess, monomers, so to speak, we're able to get a wide variety of HLB products out of the end of that process. And that includes an oil and water emulsifier, our Polyfig Emulse D6. We also have a very high HLB product that's suitable for solubilizing fragrance oils into water-based systems like cleansers or even just water, and that's our Polyfig Emulse D9. And we're also continuing to develop this product line and hope to have some products out in the market soon that will be suitable for water and oil emulsions.
Right. I saw another product you have is something that could replace the polysorbates, which are typically not naturally derived. So tell us a little bit about that technology for solubilizing oils and fragrances.
Yeah, that's our Polyfig Emulse D9. Again, that's our highest HLB product in that line. And we've done quite a bit of work to substantiate that it's better than a lot of the benchmark solubilizers. And it's, once again, 100% bio-based. As I mentioned, these are polymers. So you're probably wondering how we might make a polymer out of lauryl or, desylglucoside and sorbitan malonate. And we have a linking ingredient that's a fairly common intermediate in the marketplace. But again, what we've been able to do is we've been able to source it from a bio-based source versus its typical petrochemical source. And so what that allows us to do is to have a polymer that's 100% bio-based.
Yeah, that's really cool technology. In looking through some of your literature, you have a number of these different kinds of symbols on there. What do the symbols mean? I mean, there's the USDA symbol, the Green Star rating, the NSF. What do those means, and what did your company have to do to get those kinds of branding of your raw materials?
So we participate in a number of programs in order to, I guess, have third-party qualifications or certifications for our chemicals. And since there is, again, no set definition for natural, there are a lot of folks that are certifying against their own standards. And this helps the formulator kind of pick a standard and stick to it and have some confidence, at least, that they can communicate to their consumers that they're doing a green product. So, for example, we participate with the NPA, the Natural Products Association, and they're similar to like EcoCert in Europe. They're kind of the American version of that. And so they have a number of products which they've greenlit as suitable for including in products that would bear their seal. The NSF, we participate, is part of the old organic program that used to be run through the USDA. So for folks trying to make a made with organic claim on their product, the NSF is the certifying body for that.
You said the USDA used to run it?
Right. So basically, USDA doesn't really want to be in the business of certifying organic personal care products.
Right. They're more of a food thing here in the U.S.
Right, yeah. So that certification they've kind of pushed off to the NSF, which was the originally named the National Sanitary
Right.
Foundation, but they're a certifying body. They do a lot of standards for a lot of different type of cleaning products, and so they're very familiar with the chemistries that go into personal care and household products.
Okay.
We also participate with the U.S. EPA with their DFE program, or Design for Environment. They have a list called Clean Ingredients, and we have a number of products certified through that. So that's more for the household formulator.
Right.
And then there's a separate USDA program that we participate in as well, which is the USDA BioBase program. And that is one where, through third-party testing, they do some radiocarbon analysis and determine what percentage of the carbons in a chemical come from either a petrochemical, old carbon source,
Sure,
or
sure.
a biorenewable new carbon source.
So that's where
And
you get
so,
the green star rating? So.
No, that's another one
Oh,
altogether as well. And
okay.
it's just to wrap up on the USDA, what
Sure.
they do is it just assigns a number. And so, there's no good or bad necessarily, but what it does is it gives us a formulator a lot of flexibility. If they're going to say, well, I want all my ingredients going in to be at least 90% bio-based, or I want my finished product to be, say, for example, 95% bio-based, they can then select products that are certified, according to that standard, and figure out, where they're going to be at the end. The Green Star rating is similar, but a little bit different. It's one that we actually developed ourselves to do the same sort of thing. But it's a calculation more done on the, I guess you would say, the honor system, so to speak. There's no radiocarbon dating to check to see where all those carbons come from. But it is a way for somebody to calculate for a given chemical what the percentage of green carbons versus, I guess, black carbons would be.
Right.
So a 10.0 on the Green Star rating would be similar to 100% bio-based through the USDA program.
Well, there's some really interesting stuff going on in this space with the different chemistries that people are trying, the different methods of creating compounds, and all of the different agencies that can certify that you're natural. Certainly seems to be growing, and the market seems to be growing too.
Yeah, there's still a lot of, I guess the market is still fairly fractured. Because there's all these different certifying bodies, people are, still have to pick one or the other, or even if they're going to do more than one, it does limit them somewhat in what they're going to be able to select and, what they need to do to get their final certification.
Yeah, it certainly makes it more complicated for the finished goods formulator.
Well, I guess the good thing about all the labels is it is something that they can hang their hat on. At
Right.
the end of the day, they can say, well, my product is certified by the NPA. If you don't think it's natural, then, take it up with them.
Right.
Or I trust the NPA to give a natural rating, and so I'm going to go by their standard.
So if someone wanted to learn more information about Colonial Chemical and the technologies you have, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, we're available on the web, of course, at www.colonialchem.com. And you can get our contact information there. Because I am doing applications here, I'm probably the formulator's best contact here, and folks can email me, Dennis, that's Dennis, at colonialchem.com, or feel free to give me a call as well.
All right, I'll be sure to put the contact information in the show notes. Thanks again, Dennis, for coming on the program. I hope to see you at an upcoming SEC meeting.
Yeah, I'll be at the Twin Cities chapter SEC meeting presenting some of our technology, the SugarNate technology there. That one is in Minneapolis on February 17th. I'm also going to be at the Intermountain West SEC meeting for their Snow and Learn on March 12th. I'll be presenting the PolySugarMulse technology there, and we'll be at the Twin Cities Holistic Symposium. I won't be there personally, but we'll be presenting as a company, and we'll also be at the New York Suppliers Day coming up in May.
Well, that's lots of opportunities for people to meet you or to learn more about Colonial Chemicals. Thanks again, Dennis, for coming on the program.
Thank you.
Well, that's all for our show today. I told you that we were going to be launching a new Formulating Natural course coming up, and we are taking pre-orders now. You can go to chemistcorner.com/natural-cosmetics to get more information and register. I'll, of course, put a link in the show notes. But here are the basic details. The course is starting on February 17, 2015. It will feature 6 modules and will take 12 weeks to complete. The modules will cover all the key information you'll need to create your own natural cosmetic formulas. There will be an introductory module which covers all the natural cosmetic market, the definition of natural, the various standards that you can follow, and the information you need to create your own standards. There will be a couple of modules that focus on all the raw materials you need to create natural cosmetics. We'll cover such things as natural surfactants, emulsifiers, oils and butters, preservatives, thickeners, colorants, extracts, moisturizing ingredients, and more. Everything you need to create a natural cosmetic will be covered. We'll also have a couple of modules dedicated to the different types of formulas. This will cover such things as skin moisturizers and lotions, body washes, shaving creams, exfoliators, shampoos, conditioners, hair styling products, color cosmetics, and a variety of other products that would be appropriate for a natural brand. And for those of you who want the inside scoop on marketing your natural brand, we're also including a module specifically focused on that. We'll guide you through the steps needed to create a natural brand, how to get your products made, how to build your brand, and provide tips on getting your product distributed to customers. When you've completed the modules, you'll have enough information to get started making and marketing your own natural cosmetic products. So go to chemistcorner.com/naturals-cosmetics to sign up. I'll put a link, like I said, in the show notes. All right, in addition to the course coming up, I've also got a few speaking engagements coming up. On Tuesday, February 10th, I'll be speaking about natural standards at the Midwest SCC meeting in Chicago, and I'll be giving another talk in Minnesota at their Natural Symposium on March 17th. And finally, I'm doing a live formulating class in New York on April 13th, so you can check out information about that at the scconline.org. It does sound like I'm pretty busy, though. Whew! All right, hopefully I can also keep doing podcasts and writing blog posts. Thanks again for listening. Be sure to follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. We are active on both of those social media networks. And, of course, you can get lots of questions answered at the Cosmetic Science Forum, which you can get to through the blog chemistcorner.com. All right, that's all I've got today. Thanks so much for listening. Now, go make a difference.